This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 295. Today, AC and I are going to talk about Facebook being down and a whole bunch of other news. Recorded live, 14th of March, 2019.
Hey, we all know that sometimes shift happens. That's why this spring, the inaugural Shift Happens conference will be coming to Washington, D.C. on June 12th to June 13th. Hear from industry heavy hitters, change agents, and innovators as they share digital transformation wisdom. With keynotes by Microsoft's Jeff Tepper and Tony Townes-Whitley and analyst insights from Constellation and Forrester Research, this event is not to be missed. Over 2 days, find out how to get the most out of your Office 365 and SharePoint investments and hear about the successes and failures firsthand from some of the largest and most regulated organizations. For more information, visit www.shifthappenscon.com and use the discount code CLOUDSHOW for 25% off registration for both single and group discounts.
I don't know about you, AC, but I felt lost yesterday. Instagram, Facebook, what happened?
It actually knocked me down quite a bit, and not for the procrastination side. I was selling things on Facebook Marketplace, and I was supposed to be like meeting people yesterday afternoon, and they were going to tell me what time and when to meet, and we all of a sudden went dark. So none of that happened, and I'm frantically trying to sell two things before I head out of town for 2 weeks. I also had a bunch of Facebook ads that I was going to be doing some work on and uploading them yesterday afternoon before I got out of town for 2 weeks. I couldn't do that either.
Yeah, I guess I hadn't really thought about those sorts of things. But the biggest impact to me was our kids were going over to a friend's place for a play date after school yesterday. And I didn't have the parents of the kids that they were going and having the play date with. I didn't have their phone number. And I tried to message them because we'd spoken to them on Messenger. And so I opened up Messenger to try to go send them a message, and it's failing to send it. I'm like, wait a second, what? Oh yeah, Facebook.
You know, I think the most surprising thing about it to me was that I couldn't find anything about a status page. And when I finally did find a status, like when you Google for a Facebook status page, or like I use the site Down Detector, and you know, that would kind of confirm that, or that really confirmed that there was an outage, which I found to be, I haven't seen any root cause of why they went down or what was unavailable. But at the same time, CenturyLink, which I know is a huge provider of the Northwest, they had this similar spike in duration of their outage. It almost matched the graph of Facebook's outage. But when you try to go to the Facebook status page, it's on their developer site. And they were pulling a whole status page issue like the AWS guys did a couple years ago when they couldn't update the status page, or the status page was unavailable because it was on the same network where everything...
Well, so this morning, as of recording, the current state on their status page is ongoing. We are currently experiencing issues that may cause some API requests to take longer or fail unexpectedly. We are investigating the issue and working on the resolution. Start time, 23 hours ago. Last update, 41 minutes ago. I'm pretty sure your API requests may be part of the problem, but you had bigger issues yesterday, that's for sure.
It's still affecting the Facebook ad stuff, like the business manager. You go in there and a bunch of stuff isn't working. So, but Google was having a similar outage earlier this week too, where their Google Apps, the whole G Suite was knocked out for a good bit, and Gmail was even knocked down for a good bit the following day. So,
wow. It was pretty interesting. I hit the Facebook page yesterday and just got a blank page. It didn't 404. It didn't 500. There were no HTTP error codes, but it just rendered a blank page.
It was funny too how the web page and the mobile apps acted very differently. So the web page was, you'd get like the sweet bar at the top for Facebook, but then nothing would load. You get a Messenger and nothing worked. But if you went to Messenger on your phone, it worked just fine, except some messages would fail when you would try to send them.
Yeah, yeah.
It was really inconsistent. Anyway.
I can't wait to hear I hope they put something out about it.
So will they get flamed for sharing too much information about it?
So long as it's not personal information, they should be fine.
It's their own personal information. Isn't that bad?
They don't seem to think so.
I digress.
Anywho. Hey, in other news, speaking of other things going on, you know our big Teams rant last week about Teams and Emma and Teams and social networks and things. I had a really good discussion with a couple of folks on Twitter, and we'll link to my tweet about, it was an emotional tweet, let's put it that way. But anyway, it led to a really great discussion with Michael Sampson and a couple of others on Twitter. And so, yeah, we'll link to the tweet and you can go have a read of the discussion. But yeah, needless to say, it was quite a emotionally charged topic. I guess everybody's quite passionate about this, right? And it was really interesting seeing the different opinions about, no, you should be able to pick between these two different things. It's really easy to understand which one you should use and things like that. And I'm like, sure. For you guys that spend every waking, breathing second talking about Office 365, I'm sure you're used to being able to figure this out. But for normal people, I think it's super confusing. Anyway, just thought I'd bring it up as a bit of a follow-up to our Ranty McRantface last week and get some other people's opinions on it. So yeah.
One of your comments that you made on the podcast too got highlighted in some article. I saw at the end of the article, they were like, that you flipped out. And they, of course, the one thing they pick up from our show is that. Like, great, thanks for that kind of exposure.
Yeah, thanks very much. Yeah, you forget how some of this, how this sometimes works, right? But I got this notification from LinkedIn that I was mentioned in a news article, and which I think is actually pretty cool, like how they do that matching and stuff. That's amazing. Anyway, my Randy tweet got picked up by some dude who wrote a news article about it. And yeah, so now it's linked to from this guy's news article about me thinking, is this, or me saying, is this Yammer's last dying gasp as it struggles for relevance? I'm like, oh man, of all the tweets, oh well. So it goes to show you should always be prepared for whatever you say in public to go on the front page of a paper.
I remember many years ago, you might remember this, because this is back when you were first in at Microsoft, when I got picked up in a Gartner thing where I said something about SharePoint as a dev platform. And I said, you know, something pretty negative about it. But they've made huge strides in the last year and things are getting a lot better. But of course, all Gartner picked up on was the first part and published that quote without even asking me, or Forrester, one of the two. And then I remember Ryan Duguid pinging me, like going, dude, what the hell? Microsoft. I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, why'd you give this quote to Gartner? I'm like, I don't know anything about this. He goes, dude, where? It's like, man.
They don't ask. If it's publicly made, they credit you and post away. Anyway.
Yeah.
Now, I know you haven't seen this yet, but I just got to mention Apollo 11, the movie that's come out.
No spoilers, please.
They land on the moon. It's like when they came out, you know, it's like you come out of the Titanic and they're like, I didn't know the ship was going to sink.
Yeah. You ruined it.
Yeah, my gosh. No, all I'm going to say about this is I was blown away and so impressed. I took my two kids and I thought it was going to be a bit of a 50-50 whether they were going to be really into it or not. Because it's sort of documentary style movie. It's not a, you know, it's not a drama, so to speak, right? It's not fictional, obviously. It's only an hour and a half long, which is good. And they made it through no problem. And they really enjoyed it. They thought it was really interesting. I don't think they enjoyed it as much as me, but but I think you're going to really enjoy it. And if anybody out there is into spacey stuff, definitely go see it while it's on the big screen, because I've never seen footage like that from that era of the space race. And it's so well done. You know, they've got large format footage. It's so good. Such great quality, and it works really well on a big screen. And I just like the style of the movie. Like, it wasn't cheesy. It was very well done, I thought, and really, really did a good job. So I hope you enjoy it. I'm sure you will. That's what I'm getting at.
Limited. Yeah, one thing that kind of stinks is in limited theater. So it's not like...
Yeah, it's not everywhere.
Yeah, so I'm like, it's a pain.
You got to go hunt it down. It's definitely worth seeing on the big screen, because there's a lot of footage they found, you know, not long ago that was shot in large format film. And so when they, you know, when they play it on a cinema screen, and they've obviously digitally cleaned it up and all that, but when they've blown it up for a big screen, it just looks unreal. Like, it doesn't even look real, because you've never seen anything that clear and that of high quality from that era of the space race before. So you're like, if I didn't know it was a documentary, I'd be like, wow, that's great CG. But it is, it's real, and it's very, very moving. It's a great movie.
Well, something that I saw on the big screen that I know you were, I was jealous of you seeing Apollo 11, and you were probably jealous of my weekend, of what I saw last weekend, which,
oh yeah,
I got 3 days of racing, man. I went down to St. Petersburg, Florida with my wife for the opening weekend of the IndyCar season. And it was one of the better times I've been down there to that race like maybe 5 or 6 times now. And that was probably one of the better weekends. We got a little more access than we normally do. Got to go to the driver's meeting, which didn't know this, but other than the Indianapolis 500, it is the only time that they have done a public, not just driver's meeting, but any kind of a pre-major sporting event meeting in history. It's open to the public. Huh. Indy 500 does it every year. And this is the first time another sporting event has ever done that. So it was pretty cool. We went into this big theater. There were only a certain number of people that were allowed to partake in it. We were all in the seating way up to the side. They had security guards kind of standing between us and the rest of the theater. And then all of a sudden, all the owners and the team principals and the drivers came in. So they're sitting there in their fire race suits. And you got people like Chip Ganassi and Roger Penske and Bobby Rahal and all those guys like walking in. And you could see the main guys for IndyCar going through like the specific rules of the track and, you know, when can you merge in from pit lane and all that stuff and what rules are going to enforce. And drivers raising their hands, asking questions is really cool.
That's awesome. What a cool experience.
It is really cool. The sports race series that were there were, they had fewer cars than they normally do, but the sports car racing was awesome. Watched a Pirelli P1 get spun around and back into a concrete barrier at about 60 miles an hour, start driving away and the whole back of it's on fire. And so then he's frantically trying to get out of the car while like they're racing the trucks. It was right next to one of the trucks. He got out just fine. But the trucks are already rolling before the yellow flags are going. And it's like, it all happened like right below us. I had a hard time getting a picture of it as it happened so fast. But
I sort of feel so sad for the P1.
It was totally fixed and back out there the next day. And then there was another one. And you remember, I sent you and a couple other people that are race guys a picture of a car that I didn't recognize. And it's called a KTX.
Yeah.
About 3 hours after I sent you guys that picture, it came around a turn, the left rear wheels broke off.
Flew off.
And the car went almost at a complete head on into a concrete barrier. The whole front of the car was absolutely destroyed, yet they got it completely repaired and racing the next morning.
That's amazing how they can do that.
Yeah.
I'm gearing up for the opening race of Formula One is this weekend in Melbourne, where my wife is actually, strangely enough. So I'm not sure if she'll be heading down to the track, but she might catch some F1 action. Yep.
They got big news today too. You see the stuff about Charlie Whiting?
Yes, I did. Yeah, Charlie Whiting, the FIA F1 director, died from a pulmonary embolism. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Probably from a long flight to Australia. Very sad news.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Should we get into things?
Sure. Did you have a project management thing? Never mind.
I do have a thing about product management. I get asked a bunch about getting into building product and what product management does and what the differences are between it and, at regular companies and at Microsoft and all this sort of stuff. So I think I'll hold it for another episode. We've got a bunch of news to get through. So we'll talk about it another time.
Okay. Sounds good to me.
There's a teaser and an introduction to how random we can be on these episodes sometimes. Anyway, so, before we get started with the news, let's have a quick word from one of our awesome sponsors.
Are you being asked repeatedly to integrate different business systems in ever narrower timeframes and with increasing process complexity? What if you could standardize the way you build these business processes so your team are focusing on higher value tasks versus the nuts and bolts of running the processes and integrations? Nintex can make it happen. With a Nintex platform, workflows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back. Got a custom system you want to connect with? No code extensions let you plug into systems simply and easily using REST and Swagger. With Nintex, work just flows, so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever. Try it out free for 30 days at www.nintex.com/try-NWC.
Okay, AC, on to some cloud news. There's been a bunch of things going on in Azure land, so we're going to cover off those first. We've got some office news and things like that, and we're going to revisit some HoloLens news. So would you like to kick things off or should I?
I've got two GA announcements that I can go through rapid fire with because I don't really have a whole lot to really share with them. But I'll go through these two or three things first. So first one is Azure Log Analytics. It is now GA. As part of the Azure Monitor, it collects telemetry from a bunch of different sources and uses the query language from the Azure Data Explorer to retrieve and analyze the data. It is now GA in the Australia East and Australia Central regions. And another GA announcement is Azure Application Insights is now available in France Central and Korea Central.
Gotcha. Nice. I'd love to understand more about how they decide where they're going to roll certain Azure services out to. I'd love a little bit more insight about how that happens because so AKS, for example, I can't remember where it's available now, but it's not available in every Azure data center yet, I don't believe, but they pick and choose data centers to roll it out to and then obviously roll them out, but it doesn't all happen at once. It's not like a big bang, It usually is a staged thing. And I'd love to get some of their insight into how they decide where to launch new services and the order in which they roll them out to other data centers. I wonder if it's business focused or tech focused, So what I mean by that is maybe it's both, right? It's on the business side, it's like which areas have the most demand for a certain service. And where are they most likely to make money? Obviously, that's important. On the tech side, I wonder if it's, hey, we need this sort of hardware and these sorts of configurations in the data centers before we can push go on these things. Because you hear them running out of virtual machine types in certain data centers from time to time due to demand. And so there's obviously technical requirements that go into rolling out to a data center as well as business. But I'd love to see or understand how they make those calls and come up with the plans. Pretty interesting, especially at that sort of scale. We're going to launch this and how you plan for how many of these things are people going to spin up? That's a real chicken and egg problem too, right? Because take AKS. It's not an existing service it wasn't an existing service in Azure. So how do you plan for how many of them people are going to use?
Mm-hmm.
And of what type and what configuration? There's some serious modeling that has to go on.
The business of running a public cloud with all these different services from the tech side, from the business side, I would love to see it without, I'm not asking for the proprietary stuff and asking Microsoft to disclose anything that would benefit AWS or GCP. But it's more like what you're saying. How do you come up with the scale and just talk about the different factors that come into play that people don't think about? Or, what does it look like from your central data center operations to be able to monitor everything? And how does everything kind of chain up? It's, nothing that would disclose your competitive advantage, but it'd be cool to see that stuff.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, I've got one here. It's entitled Microsoft Beats Amazon to open the first cloud data center in Africa. So good news for South Africans. Microsoft has opened two data centers for Azure in Cape Town and Johannesburg. So the first footprint in South Africa from one of the major cloud vendors, I believe. I'm sure there are obviously other data centers there already. But yeah, the big players, the big three or four or whatever. Amazon are also planning to be there in 2020, apparently. So it's interesting seeing this race playing out, who gets first mover advantage in certain geographies and how that impacts them. But Microsoft's been on a storm. I mean, they've got a lot of data centers and incredible infrastructure that backs up services like Azure and have had a good lead on Amazon in terms of number of regions and things for quite a while. So it's just nice to see them keep the march of progress going. So yes, for our South African listeners, you should soon be able to pick South Africa West, which is Cape Town, and South Africa North, which is Johannesburg, from the data center list when you go deploy.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Keeping with our Azure theme, I've got an article here about a new service that is available from Microsoft. Now, I say new, it came out at the end, or it was announced at the end of February. But the title of this article is Introducing Microsoft Azure Sentinel, Intelligent Security Analysis for Your Entire Enterprise. Now, of course, I hear Sentinel, and the first thing I think of is the Matrix. But what this is that there's a term here called the Security Information and Event Management, or SIEM. It's a specific class of products. And there's a whole lot of stuff that can roll into this whole thing. And so what this is, what Azure Sentinel is, is a cloud native solution that's going to help you be able to do security analytics at cloud scale for the entire enterprise, making it easier to collect data across like a hybrid organization from devices to users to apps and to servers on any cloud, not just the Azure cloud. They've got some artificial intelligence that's sprinkled in there as well. It's all done from inside of Azure, so you don't have to worry about standing anything up. And one of the nice things about it is that they're offering it to Office 365 activity data. You can use it for free to analyze your Office 365 activity data. So just a few clicks and you can see all that information right inside of Azure. So the idea is also going to be able to cover things like GDPR has cool little things where you has a cool little graph that shows a failed logins, where they're coming from or where they're going after, and ultimately what the underlying, where the, almost tracing them through their original path as well. And then you can even set up and automate different tasks and threat responses. So it looks like the screenshot they have here is that they're leveraging some stuff straight from Microsoft Flow and or Logic Apps to be able to integrate that stuff in. So all here, got a link to it in the show notes if this is something that interests you.
Very nice indeed. More datas.
Lots more of the datas.
Lots more of the datas. Here's one for the data geeks or stats nerds. There's a new report, I guess you want to call it. So there's a new report called 2019 State of the Cloud Report, and it's published by a company called Flexera. Well, I think I got the title of the report wrong. It's actually called the RightScale 2019 State of the Cloud Report from Flexera. So it talks about trends going on in cloud world, you know, in the cloud world amongst enterprises and SMB. And there's some really interesting sort of stats that have come out of this. Let me grab a couple of my notes here. So they basically went and surveyed 786 people, 58% of which classified themselves as enterprise customers. So I imagine the other companies were smaller than what they'd consider enterprise. Not 100% sure about that. But it was really interesting. Some of the stats they gathered, they basically said more than half of these companies are now spending over $1 million on public cloud. That seems pretty reasonable. Enterprises, the people that classified themselves as enterprise customers were all basically spending over $1 million, which it's not that hard to spend over $1 million when you're a gigantic Fortune, whatever size company. Microsoft Azure is continuing to grow workloads and adoption is a big theme. Some interesting stats. The top growing public cloud services in terms of what are the things within these clouds that people are starting to adopt. High growth numbers for serverless computing, stream processing. Serverless and stream were tied for first place. Machine learning in second place. Container as a service in third place with 42% growth over last year. IoT, fourth place. And fifth place was tied with data warehouse and batch processing, both with 38% growth over last year's report. 84% of enterprises said they had a multi-cloud strategy, which is pretty interesting. Maybe for disaster recovery or spot pricing optimization or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge number, 84%. I mean, why wouldn't you though? I mean, why wouldn't you be looking at multi-vendor and playing them off against each other, honestly, for cost benefits? In terms of what people are spending, 8% of respondents said they're spending more than $12 million a year, which I thought was quite a bit.
Yeah.
And then about 25% were above 1.2, but below 12 million. So there's a bunch of money being spent there.
That's still a lot of money, yeah.
Yeah. Public cloud adoption numbers, AWS at 61% currently being used, 52% currently using Azure, which I thought was kind of interesting. Bunch of overlap, obviously. Now, the interesting one at the end of this report, or the ones at the end of the article here, is container tools being used. Given we've talked a bunch about containers, percentage of respondents responded, 57% saying currently using Docker, 48% saying Kubernetes, 44% saying AWS, ECS, or EKS, 28% saying Azure Container Service. Those were the sort of the top four. So, obviously, between those services growing super fast, as people are moving to the cloud, it's becoming more and more popular, picking up container tools and running them up there.
Oh, there's a bunch of interesting numbers there. So it's always these reports are always interesting to find. And how do they get their data? But then it's just the insight into what other companies are doing.
Yeah, exactly. And so you can go download this report for free. You've got to register, obviously, and go take a look at it for yourself. We'll link to it in the show notes.
Huh, that's very cool.
Excellent.
I have an Office 365 update here. But before we do that, though, I thought we should take a break real quick and hear from one of our esteemed sponsors.
Struggling to reproduce problems in your code base? Successful software starts with Raygun. Raygun provides application performance monitoring, unlike anything you've experienced before, offering greater clarity around how your software is performing for your customers than any other APM provider. Easily detect and diagnose issues impacting end users and monitor every part of your stack in one place. It's time to get back to building great software instead of fighting it. Start your journey to better software quality. Try Raygun free at raygun.com today.
All right, CJ, we have a roadmap item that is now rolling out. Actually, it's in the middle of rolling out right now. This is an interesting one. You can now share and co-author documents in Office 365 with LinkedIn connections. You can do this directly from OneDrive or from SharePoint using both Word, Excel, PowerPoint. All of this is stuff that is available to use now inside the Office 365 roadmap. It's number 48534, and it's rolling out to all the public instances of Office 365 right now. This is going to enhance the way that users can connect and collaborate with other people outside of their organizations, and it's all powered by LinkedIn. Now, this applies everywhere, and it's supposed to complete the rollout to the targeted release tenants by the end of March, and it should be complete worldwide by the end of April. However, it's not included with the government cloud instances of Office 365 at this time. So it does not include, it's all the public instances right now.
That's interesting. So basically, they're letting you go share with a LinkedIn contact and then using some sort of LinkedIn login to have you, you know, log in and get into those documents and edit them.
Yeah,
I imagine.
Think about the interviews that you could do now with people, because LinkedIn's such a big recruiting spot too, and the interviews that you could do with some people and live coding or something like that.
Huh.
Or live spreadsheeting. I don't know if I'd want to do that.
With an
interview. Well,
it sounds risky.
I'm not sure I'd want. No, risky is live PowerPointing.
Yeah, that one's not for the faint of heart, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Interesting. Oh, that's kind of cool. I mean, I don't really use my LinkedIn login for anything except LinkedIn. So I'm not sure what motivated them to do this. Like, I wonder where this scenario came from. You know, if you can share it, if you can send a link to somebody with just an email address, what's the deal with picking a LinkedIn contact and sending it to them?
You have to go find them find their email address from your contact list or.
I guess if you could search for them in the people picker or something and then, you know, search for a contact that way and share it with them, I guess it could speed things up a bit.
Mm.
Yeah. I got one from Gartner here about Office 365. You know how we love Gartner reports. This one has said, how to successfully migrate documents and collaboration processes to Office 365. And it's a report from Gartner. And the reason I bring it up is because we have some friends that work at Rencor who are mentioned in this report, apparently. I haven't read the whole report yet, but I've got a bookmark to go take a look at. So basically, if you're looking for advice from Gartner on moving to Office 365, then this report talks about all the sort of stuff you should be thinking about before you do your migration, partner tools that can help you get there, analyzing as part of your migration planning, carrying out a pilot and migration and things like that. So it might give you some food for thought. I don't know how many migrations Gartner have done. So my advice would be to take this with a grain of salt and to get professional help. But it might just be a good sort of framework, I guess, for want of a better word, as you approach your migration. But just thought I'd mention it because there are some tools partners that are reviewed or mentioned in the report that you might want to take a look at.
Mm. Interesting.
Yeah, it's always funny getting advice from people whose job is to sell their advice, right? Because it's kind of like, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of like buying self-help books from people that write books as a living. Like, so why are you writing a self-help book about path to riches instead of, is that your path to riches? By selling me books, telling me how I'm supposed to get to path to riches? Like, is that, that's what's happening.
It's funny. I get some of those comments too, being my primary work is like, you know, writing about tech, writing instructional stuff. And everybody's like, well, but if you're writing about it, then it means you're not really doing it. So what is it, the real world projects? I'm like, yeah, but to that point, I'm not like talking about architectural decisions and stuff like that. It's more or less, here's how everything works. All of that information is all going to be buried inside of each organization. And it's more of a conversation. To me, it's not so much of a, that's not so much of a something you put in like a training course or something. But I mean, yeah, it, you know, but from, you know, Gartner, I mean, I can see if they were going to interview a boatload of people about a migration and then we're going to write about what our interviews were all about. I can get that being part of the paper, but yeah, it's always a little, I agree with you. It's always a little odd.
Yeah. I mean, they do get to talk to a lot of customers. And so have a bunch of insight into what customers have done in the past and how they've approached it, I imagine. So, you know, there's probably some substance to this at some level. Anywho, have you got another one for us?
We've got one here on HoloLens too.
Yeah, I just dropped this in. You know, we mentioned about HoloLens and the military and Microsoft picking or doing this deal with US Department of Defense. But I just thought I'd link to this review that's up on TechCrunch about HoloLens 2 when they've, you know, they got their hands on the prototype or one of the demonstration units, I suppose. And so if you're interested in more detail about how it sort of stacks up and stuff, the review's not particularly deep, you know, it's not long at all, which is a bit of a shame, but it might give you some insight into HoloLens 2 versus HoloLens 1 and all that sort of stuff. The interesting thing is, some people are saying it's a bit misleading how Microsoft is saying about this amazing field of view and that the field of view is not stunning, but is better than the first one.
HoloLens and this whole augmented reality thing, it seems like it's gotten so much more tail wagging the dog, like popular. Like it gets so much press time, especially for Microsoft. Same thing with Google Glass. And I see companies looking at it and saying, hey, this would make a lot of sense, but I don't see people rushing out and using this. I've yet to see any applications of this in certain scenarios. I've seen the demos and I get every time I see a demo going, yeah, I can see where that makes sense. Like, yeah, sure. I can see the value in this. I can see the value in this. But to the masses,
I want to see it being used in the real world. That's what you're saying.
I haven't seen that. I get that companies are doing it, but I just feel like I feel like I'm being told it's so much more important than it really is.
Yeah.
And that people are really using it. So
I wonder, I mean, I get what you're saying. You're basically saying, is it a solution looking for a problem?
No, that's not what I'm saying. I think it's more that when someone is, I'll parse it down like this, with as much time as it's had in keynotes at Build and at Ignite and at, at Inspire, these different conferences, when I measure the amount of press it's gotten to the amount of usage it's had in the business world, compare it to other tech, I see it being very overweighted. Does that make sense?
Yep. Yep.
Okay.
The ratio is off.
Yeah, it just feels like it is. And I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but...
Yeah. I think the really telling part for me along similar lines is in the keynotes, it's always Microsoft demos. Mm-hmm. It's not customer demos. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
It's not a customer standing up and showing us how they've applied the technology in their environment in production use.
Everything is much more contrived.
Yeah, right? It's like, you know, you've got the gas fitter who's being called out to the commercial, I don't know, manufacturing facility who needs a part for this thing. And oh, look, magically, HoloLens is telling me which part that is. Stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Whereas I want to see like, is a manufacturer or a, you know, it's probably in manufacturing because that's all I can think of right now. But like, here is Rolls-Royce using it to lower their error rates from like 4% to 1% on manufacturing defects of jet aircraft and like real footage from real people in the factory using the thing. And I suspect we're not seeing it because nobody's doing it.
Yeah, or
maybe only in prototypes, you know, not in full-on production use.
Yeah, I'm sure that there's plenty of uses for it. I'm sure people have used it in plenty of places. I just don't, it just feels to me like I'm being told how important it is. Like going, yeah, that's great, and I get those people can see it, but how much of it does it really need to be discussed in the way you guys are really pushing it? Because it just doesn't seem like, could that time have been used elsewhere? And to me, it seems yes right now.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's just still too far ahead of itself, right? And it's basically, and we're saying, yep, there is no current production use, but this is technology that's developing and there's going to be awesome uses for it. Stay tuned and get ready. And next maybe week, we're just ahead of it.
Next week is the MVP summit. And if they had a session about HoloLens 2 development, 80% of the people that go in the room are interested in it. 20% of the people in the room are doing something with it or going to do something with it. The rest of us just want to play with it. I want to see how to go shoot aliens coming out of my wall.
Yeah. That'd be pretty sweet.
Yeah, it would be cool.
Okay, let's move on.
CJ's Hyperfish automates the collection of user profile information from users in organizational directories such as Office 365, SharePoint, Active Directory, and HR systems. The secure service supports on-premises, hybrid, and online environments. Bring your directory to life at hyperfish.com.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework.
It's that time of the show, AC. I know you've got a really sweet pick. Why don't you lead us off this week?
You peaked it early. I got a cool
story. I looked at the URL and I'm like, ooh, that looks good.
Have you gone to it yet?
I have.
All right. So this is cool. This is a company called Retro EV. So retro-ev.com. I believe they're in Norway, if I'm not mistaken, but they're definitely a European company. And what they do is they take existing classic cars and they turn them into an electric vehicle. Now, right now, they only are doing this for three cars. One of them is the Triumph. One of them is a Rolls-Royce or a Bentley. And then one of them, and the way I learned about this is because a friend of my mother-in-law's is actually doing this with his MG. Yes,
wow.
He has an absolutely gorgeous MG, like the kind that you only drive with the leather racing gloves, leather driving gloves.
Yeah.
And he is planning to take his car and box it up and send it over there, dropping a pretty penny, but he's switching it over to an electric vehicle. He just wants, he can't do it. He can either do it as an MG Roadster or a coupe. He's got the Roadster.
Oh man, that would be so cool. This drop top Rolls looks like the business.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's full classic Thunderbird style, but just EV, spectacular.
Yeah, it's nuts. They're telling him that it's probably going to take 6 to 9 months
to do the conversion.
Yeah, to do the conversion of the Roadster. And it blows my mind, man.
Oh, man, I want this Rolls. This looks so cool. It just looks awesome. It looks retro. It looks cool. That's rad. If I had a spare, oh, my gosh, that's a lot of money.
Oh, yeah. It's really expensive. It's very expensive. And there's a couple different ways you can do it. You can either supply the car, or they can go find a car and do it. And he's the guy that I know is going to supply his car for them. So he's not going to have to pay as much, but it's one of those things you have to apply for because it takes a long time for it to do it.
Yeah, gotcha. So, wow, that looks rad. I think there'll be more and more of this stuff popping up. Like that's, I think we've mentioned on the show before that guy that converted his S5 Audi into an EV. He basically put all the Tesla running gear in an S5. And it's not as high end as these, obviously. Like he's got his entire back seat is like full of batteries, for example. That's really cool.
Yeah. It's not a ton of capacity. It's only got 22 kilowatt hours, which what's that going to give you? That's probably going to be about 60 miles or so, I'd say, 60 or 70 miles.
Yeah, but dude, that's like 500 because you're doing it in style.
Oh, hell yeah. Right?
That's a slow cruise down the boardwalk, that puppy. Look at that.
Yeah. How about you? What you got for us today?
I've got an interesting article. I haven't finished it, but I got started reading it and I thought it was kind of interesting. It's called Never Delete, The Digital Hoarders Who Collect Tumblers, Medieval Manuscripts, and Terabytes of Text Files. So you know how there's those shows on Discovery and stuff or whatever about hoarders and usually like their house is full of garbage or, you know, and they're like little, you know, rabbit warrens inside their houses. This is the sort of the digital equivalent of it. And so it basically sort of lifts the veil a little bit on what it's like to be being a data hoarder. And there's these people that just roll around collecting terabytes and terabytes and terabytes of content. of all sorts of different stuff. There's this one dude they talk about who's got 2.6 petabytes in his spare room of stuff. Crazy, eh?
This is crazy.
Yeah. It's like there's people like digitally archiving all sorts of stuff, you know, and they're the sort of the digital hoarder variety of what you would have seen on Discovery if you've ever seen that. But there's a subreddit called Data Hoarder, which you can go in and get a bit of insight into this.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, cool. I just found this. I haven't finished, like I said, I haven't finished the thing yet, but I just started finding this article really fascinating. I don't want to start data hoarding, but it's going to be interesting. At some point in the future, things are going to start going missing off the internet. And these people, you know, it's like the Wayback Machine, right? Mm-hmm. Backing up like copies of people's websites and stuff. I think we'll see the same thing with this stuff, you know, where stuff goes missing. And these guys have got like, I've got this ancient copy of this GeoCities site from whenever. Fascinating what people get up to as a hobby.
I can see this. I mean, I have a NAS in my office, and because it's got so much space on it, I just keep throwing stuff at it. So like when all the content that I use to record for my class, I put the original stuff on the NAS, and I don't just for, hey, I may need this later. And it's never really occurred to me like how much stuff I'm collecting until I got an alert like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
You've only got 5% free left, which still was like hundreds of gigs. I'm like, can I get rid of some of this stuff? And I go back and look at it. I'm like, holy crap, I've got a lot of old stuff that I don't have any use to keep. I've got my very first job that I had 20 years ago. I still have the web projects from that and the DHTML and the Java that I wrote.
Yeah, like, I've got that stuff somewhere too. Fortunately, none of it really took up that much space.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. So it's like, I can get rid of this. And I look at the impact. I'm like, in principle, I should get rid of it. But it's not going to make an impact, so who cares?
Yeah, data hoarders. All right, cool. AC, thanks for another great show this week. We will be back next week with more goodies.
Yeah, man. I get to come out and see you. I'll be in your neck of the woods for the MVP Summit, so I'm looking forward to catching up with you in person again.
I am looking forward to sitting down and having a quiet beverage and a bit of a natter.
Sounds good.
See you then.
All right, man.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show. We'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as an MP3 or WAV file and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up for our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.